Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello and welcome to Table Manners. I'm Jessie Ware and I'm here. We're doing a special one. This is a special one because you're not cooking.
I'm feeling relaxed. I'm feeling quite cool because we're in air conditioning.
And
I feel like we're in Europe.
Yes.
This is like a European restaurant.
Well, we're not in Europe.
Like, we're in France, but we're not. We're on Melrose Avenue at Mozza.
Now, anyone who has been to Los Angeles may have eaten at Mozza. And if you haven't eaten at Mozza, you probably have heard of this chef. She's loved by the whole universe,
I think.
Her name is Nancy Silverton.
Every time I've mentioned her, people think,
wow. It's the one that I feel like people are so excited that we've got her. This is, you know, this is a big deal for us.
Yeah.
So we, I don't know how we wangled this, but we're not cooking. So we're in her restaurant. Nancy is going to cook for us and give us our food. And we're going to talk to her all about table manners.
And her amazing life.
So Nancy,
I wonder what she's going to wear. She's a bit of a stylist.
Well, I've brought my bigger glasses because she wears a strong frame. Nancy has a chef's kitchen on Netflix. She has many different restaurants. She had La Brea Bakery, which was adored. And she is known to be the kind of the starter,
the starter of sourdough.
The sourdough mother. Artisanal bread. We're trying to be very well behaved. I guess we have to be on our best behaviour.
Why?
I don't know. Because we're in somebody else's house.
Okay, so no arguing.
Just last week, Kendall and Kylie had their makeup launch in the room right next to us that we would be in, but the fridge is a little buzzy, so we're in this room.
I'm going to have to go out and put money on the meter halfway through, no doubt.
So this morning, Mum, we went to Benny's house.
Yeah.
And we had a pool morning, and he got us Courage bagels. Now, Courage bagels are a bit of a phenomenon.
From Manchester, it's different.
Look, so Courage bagels, I've seen on Instagram, everyone's talking about them. There are queues, lines for ages. However, we got a little delivery. And I have to say, it was a very delicious bagel. However, it didn't taste really like a bagel. It was like a sourdough bun bagel.
It was chewy.
But I liked it.
It was chewy on the outside.
It was tasty.
I cut it because of my veneers.
I was scared about my veneer, actually.
I had to cut those. So
it was very delicious.
It was delicious. Well, the toppings were delicious.
The tomatoes on those.
Oh, I didn't have. Oh, I the had tomato. The caviar.
Oh, darling.
Or the lumpfish roe.
It wasn't lumpfish. It was big cod's roe, big balls.
Oh, it was lovely. I love big balls.
That's what she... And then lox. It was very, very nice. However, I didn't go for my third one because I knew we were coming here.
Your third
which is also
half.
A doughy.
I had two halves.
I walked up to Benny's with the baby to earn my Courage bagel.
Crikey.
Oh yeah, vey.
How did you get up that hill?
I struggled.
I bet you did.
I did. But anyway, so now I have even more room for what Nancy Silverton is going to cook for us. We're waiting to meet her.
The goddess that is Nancy Silverton coming up on Table Manners.
Nancy, so I don't know how much you know about this.
No, but that's okay.
Okay, fine. Well, usually we'd cook for you and you'd come to our house.
Oh, that's right. That I do know of.
Yeah.
Yeah, however, well, I know you owe me a meal.
Yeah. That is fine.
When you're in London, we'll do you one.
Okay.
But
okay.
If I'm being honest, this suits us perfectly. Yeah. That we get to eat.
This is such a treat for us.
Okay, so we're sending you food from Mozza to Go,
yeah,
which is great.
Will you be eating this with us?
No, but I will watch you eat.
do you eat, Nancy?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Is it kind of like you, if you see one more sourdough or pizza base, you may just kind of, you're tired of it at the moment?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm very happy watching you eat.
Oh, I'm very happy to eat and you to not take my portion. So I'm going to have yours. So Nancy, Mum and I do this podcast. We've been doing it for years now. And I think we were actually going to have you in London when you were over for the opening of... I want to say mozzarella. How do you say it?
Mozza. So think mozzarella.
Okay,
and
fine.
That's where the word comes
okay,
from.
Okay, fine. So...
We would say it mozza anyway.
Mozzarella. Yeah. Oh, anyway. We would.
Now, see, most people, or not most, but a lot of people say matza. They want to make
like
it a Jewish
matzo, yeah.
restaurant. It's not. It's an Italian restaurant.
Yeah.
And it's short for mozzarella.
So, Nancy, we talk about food, which is obviously quite easy for you.
Yeah.
But can we start at the beginning? You grew up in Los Angeles, right?
Yes, I grew up. Well, you are not from here, so you don't necessarily understand the divisions, but I grew up in what's called the San Fernando Valley.
We know about the Valley.
Do you know? You do?
Yeah. Licorice Pizza was all about the Valley.
Licorice Pizza, the Heim girls.
Yeah. Wow, you're really up on it. Well, growing up there, which I didn't understand, it was very looked down on. It was
the Valley.
And still you kind of say, I'm from the Valley.
What,
you know?
Why is that?
I don't know.
Because it's not in like the hub of Hollywood.
Or the people, you know, first of all, there's been songs about Valley Girl, right?
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I was 17-ish and took a bus to the beach for the first time by myself, right? It was like a big thing because we don't use public transportation in any of Los Angeles. It's like, it's so crazy. So I took the bus there and there was the big graffiti on the wall, Vals Go Home. And I'm like, what's a Val?
Vals Go Home.
I'm like, what's a Val? You know, I didn't even know that, because growing up in the Insular Valley, I didn't know that there was this distinction between the valley and the other side of the hill.
But was it something about class or?
But it wouldn't be something about class when you think of necessary. Maybe I think it had to do more with sophistication, but not class in terms of money class, wealth.
Okay.
It wasn't like that necessary. I think it was more like they don't know what they're backwards. I don't know what the equivalent would be in, say, London.
Yeah,
like what part of London
would
if you
grow up? Would it be like saying Essex girls
Essex.
Go home?
Yeah, it'd be Essex. Yeah.
Okay. But so, and you grew up and both your parents worked.
Yes.
Are they both Jewish?
They both are Jewish. My father was from Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
Yeah.
And my mother was from Yonkers, New York.
But originally, where was their background from?
Their background was, my mother's side was, I don't, her father was, his her mother's mother's side was, I know, from Belarus.
Yeah.
I know her father's side was from Russia.
Yeah.
I know my father's father's side was from Poland. I know my father's mother's side, although they were all born in Saskatchewan, Canada, they were actually also from somewhere in Russia.
Yeah.
Did you grow up with lots of Jewish food around you?
No, like none.
Are you kidding? Why?
I don't, you know, my father was brought up religious-ish, and I think he turned his back on it when he became an adult. My mother grew up with, you know, it's known as, are you Jewish or?
We're Jewish.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So she grew up, I guess, which they would say was Reformed.
Yeah, we're Reformed.
We never went to temple. And somebody was asking me, because I am going to my daughter's house on Friday for Passover.
Yeah.
Because she married someone that's not religious, but does celebrate all the holidays.
Well, that's what we do.
So, but I didn't always. It's funny. I probably celebrated at my house Passover, if I had to say growing up, 6 times, maybe that's an exaggeration. But when we did, like my mother would have said maybe, I think I'm going to have Passover this year. And then she would have it, and my father would put together this very arty program that had to do with, like, the graphic story of Passover in beautiful woodcuts that he would find. Oh, not that he made, but he would find kind them. Of like Italian woodcuts, kind of,
yeah.
that were just very
that told
graphic.
The story.
That told the story.
Like the Haggadah, but
exactly.
in woodcuts.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then he told the story in a very kid-friendly kind of way rather than the traditional that could be taken as kind of boring. Way.
Have you still got these woodcuts?
Yeah.
Are you going to bring them over on Friday?
I think I will. I do have them. I have like the last kind of book he put together, which was probably 15 years. He's no longer alive, but like 20 years ago or 15 years ago or something.
So there wasn't Jewish food. So what food were your parents cooking? Were they good cooks?
You know, so I grew up in, I'm 67. So I grew up in, well, born in the 50s, 54, but let's say I grew up in the 60s. And I don't know, again, how it was in London at that time, but in the United States, the 60s was the beginning of convenience food. So all the food that my mother would never buy, and I hated her for it. So I wanted TV dinners. You know, do you know what that looked like?
Yeah, but we'd never really got TV dinners. We had frozen foods.
Right.
But we never really had TV dinners where it was, TV dinners was like, you'd have a roast beef, but it was compartmentalized
yeah.
on a little tray.
And none of your food.
And
like
it was yeah. and it was flat, so you could put it on your lap while you watch the telly.
Right,
so
or like, have a TV tray.
Or a TV tray on
on an airplane, kind of.
Yeah.
Kind of,
yes. But none of the food touched.
It was all divided, compartmentalized. So you had your potato in one bit.
And I thought it was the greatest thing in the world. And I had to go to my grandma's where she would buy it. But my mother, you know. And there
did you eat kosher?
No kosher, but she was a health conscious cook.
Yeah.
In the days when nobody really, before it was popular. So for instance, well, one thing is that nobody would ever trade lunches with me. I don't know, was that it? Did you pack your school lunches when you went to school?
My mom made my school lunch, yeah.
So you didn't need it like in a cafeteria? Because when I was first in school, there wasn't really cafeterias, but there was, you brought your lunch. And then all the kids love to trade for all, like I'll trade you my cookies for your cookies or things like that. And my mother packed me everything that nobody would want to trade. So for instance, my sandwiches were all on whole grain bread.
Good.
And I would say, can't you buy white bread like everybody else? Can't you cut the crusts off like everybody else? Can't you cut it in triangles like, you know? She was very into packaging too. So like, for instance, if she ever bought me potato chips, which was so rare, she would never buy like the individual packaged potato chips.
Oh.
She would buy like the big bag and throw them in the bag. Not even that, like thrown in, because she thought it was a waste, you know? A waste of packaging, things like that, you know? So I never got the food I wanted to eat in my house or in my lunches, but she was a good cook. And I didn't think she was, and I didn't appreciate what she made.
What was one of your favorite dishes of hers that you accepted?
I accepted when she would make brisket.
Oh, how did she do it?
She braised it.
Yeah.
In fact, I just did this collaboration with a company from Australia, a Wagyu beef company, and they sent me a bunch of briskets, which were fantastic. And we are doing this Mother's Day box where I got to choose 50 people that I'm sending a brisket to with a recipe, how I prepare it, with the two sauces that she didn't serve it with, but that I do, and a whole little booklet about myself and my mom.
How lovely.
And it was like and what I included in this booklet was a copy, because when she passed away, I took her recipe book, which was not a huge recipe book, but it was filled with clippings from the newspaper, and there was a clipping of brisket. So it's like, I don't know if that's the one she used.
Do you like a sweet sauce with your brisket?
I like horseradish cream
and
salsa and a green sauce, salsa verde.
So you braise it, not because
I braised sometimes it's marinated overnight. It's braised in beer. It's, you know.
Okay, so I braise mine in Coca-Cola.
See, I know because I love ham done that way, and it's a secret that you don't really realize it's there. But I think it's really smart.
Yeah, so I've done.
You do yours with tomatoes as well, no?
I can't remember.
Oh no, loads of onions.
Loads of masses and masses of onions and Coca-Cola.
Well, you know, we have brisket on the menu at. in London now.
Oh, nice.
You should try it, because when I went over there last time, they wanted to do it as a Mother's Day special. Mm. And I said, just put it on as a kind of a main, you know.
And
so
it's well?
On there. I think it's on there as a regularly.
It's
you should go look.
Brisket is such a tasty
cut. It's a tasty cut and a tasty preparation. Yeah. And we all love braised soft meat.
I love,
and,
it's,
you know,
gorgeous. Sorry, yeah.
I know, it just,
and what would you have it with?
So me at home or now?
Yeah, now.
Now the way we serve it, and in London, is in a giant bowl, and I just do a hunk of it. I don't even slice it. I like a hunk torn off. And then we have delicious Jersey potatoes, carrots, and spring onions, braised.
Oh, so nice. It's a big, I've never done that. How nice. They're
and
like
then
baby
salsa verde.
Leeks in a way.
Yeah, exactly.
So speaking about, you know, the fact that you wanted white bread, you didn't want any of that whole grain shit.
Yeah.
And then you become the queen of
baking
artisanal bread. When was the shift? What happened? When did
I grew up?
Yeah, fair enough.
So, you know, I used to fight with my parents and my sister because she was a lot more adventurous. Now, again, back in the 60s, for a family to go out for a meal, it wasn't as prolific as it is now. So there were choices of coffee shops or little mom and pop kind of quirky ethnic restaurants. And when we would travel or take a road trip, I was always like, let's go to whatever that, Denny's, you know, there's a coffee shop, because I knew that I could get something that I wanted. And they would always be, and they would look for these like little kind of quirky kind of restaurants. And I hated it. But I started cooking in college, and that's, and with the love of being in the kitchen. So it was the kitchen, being in the kitchen, and the idea of pleasing people with what you made is what really drew me into the business. The food was secondary. And
so, and you started with like vegetarian cuisine,
yeah,
right?
And I only started with vegetarian because that was the only opening in the dormitory kitchen that, or it wasn't that it was the only opening, it was the person who I wanted to meet was in charge of the vegetarian program at the dormitory. So that's why.
You'd cook for your fellow students?
Yes.
Like, because that's not what we do. We have, I mean, that's, is that quite an American thing to do, that you have chefs that are students in learning and then cooking
for? Well, I don't know if it's an American thing, but it was also a way, I mean, I didn't necessarily need to do this, but it gave me either free or free, half off my dorm. So for I think it's an opportunity to work on campus that's offered.
When did you know that you were actually quite good at cooking? Which dish was the one that people came back for more in that dorm?
In that dorm, it wasn't the dish. It was just what we made for vegetarians. Mm. And so at that time, you know, I got to tell you, it was food that I don't know if I would even eat today or... you know, but back then, because nobody really took vegetarian or people that were non-meat eaters into the mix, it would be like, let's say it was different vegetables, you know, let's say cauliflower, broccoli, and squash, you know, cooked, and then a lot of cheese melted on, and then sunflower seeds and sesame seeds on top, you know, it was like that. It wasn't like it was so elevated, you know, or so thought out. I bought a cookbook and I started cooking out of that
cookbook. Was it?
And I still have that cookbook. It was called Cooking Creatively with Natural Foods.
I think I need to buy it.
Well?
I think you don't need to. Well, I haven't gone back to it, but I have used it in photo shoots because it's such a part of me. That was my first cookbook. And one of the things that was the page that was kind of the dirtiest, so it must be that I made it the most, was something called lentil loaf. So you could think about this block, you know, because at that time, time, vegetarian options were not considered that refined. You know, they were always, you know, it was always like, well, it's vegetarian, and that's why it tastes
so bad.
Yeah, you
have to put up with it.
Yeah, but it's not.
So, and you've talked about this epiphany that you had at college, didn't
you?
And you left. Well, you went to pursue cooking.
Yes.
So, was it quite rare for a woman to be in these kitchens? Did you start, you went and trained, but when you were first in these kind of professional kitchens, where was your first job, and was it quite rare that you were a woman in that situation?
Well, you know, I never, well, a couple things, because that's a question that brings in all sorts of answers. One was that I stayed in college until the very, almost the very end, which was my last year.
And what were you studying?
I went in for political science, then mm-hmm. I finished in liberal studies, and I was in a very tiny little college within a college, and it was called Hutchins School within the college I went to. But when I called my parents up and said, I'm not taking my finals, I'm dropping out, all I really want to do is cook, and what they could have said, being both professionals, both a child cooking, wanting to cook as a living, was very new in the 70s. Again, 2022, any child that comes back to their parents and says, I want to cook and I'm going to be a TV star, their parents are like, yes, you know. But back then, I don't know. So there was nothing, no precedent, right? And what my father said to me without a pause was, that's okay as long as you sign up for the Cordon Bleu. I didn't even know what the Cordon Bleu was. Oh, and that's how I ended up there. There was a year waiting list to get into the London. He knew, and I don't know how he knew. I didn't even know there were cooking, that people went to cooking schools to cook.
Where was the Cordon Bleu?
On Marylebone Lane, which is so crazy. It's no longer on Marylebone Lane. The Cordon Bleu still exists in London, but it's not on Marylebone Lane. But what's so crazy is that's where I'm back, is in the Marylebone area.
And it's got the best restaurants. It's full of gorgeous restaurants.
And I lived in West Hampstead at a bed and breakfast.
Lovely.
And I would take the Bakerloo line and get off at Marylebone High Street every day and walk.
Yeah.
Loved it. But so after I first cooked, when I started cooking in the dorms, the next couple summers, when I came back to Los Angeles, I did get kitchen jobs at some little local eateries, right? So I cooked a little there, went back to school. But when I dropped out to actually work, and I told my parents that I asked them if they'd be willing to support me, because I was going to walk into a kitchen and say, let me work for free, because I knew that I didn't have the skill to get paid at what I wanted to learn. You know, I would otherwise have been stuck in some little part of the kitchen if they were going to pay me. And they said, yes, they would. And it was a restaurant about an hour away from me, drive, and I didn't want to move. And it was called 464 Magnolia in a little town in Marin County called Larkspur.
And was your experience positive, I presume?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's what I wanted to say, a couple things. So first of all, most importantly, I grew up in a family of very, very strong women. I don't mean my direct family, although my mother was, but I mean her aunts were very, very strong women. One was jailed. She was a suffragette, you know, very, very political. The other one was a very famous lobbyist in Washington, D.C. So I grew up with the feeling, or not with the feeling, I just grew up kind of with the genetics that women could do anything. I didn't ever think of it as any gender issue in a kitchen. So that's one thing. Secondly, I grew up in California, which is very different from the rest of the world. So, for instance, if you were to ask me, who are my mentors or who are my favorite cooks, I would list you 10 cooks, and I wouldn't even be realizing that they were all women. And they were all California women, you know. So it wasn't so unusual in California. And then thirdly, the three kitchens that I worked in before I opened my own restaurant, Campanile, which was my first restaurant in 1989, were kitchens that were run by very open-minded men who embraced everybody. So there were just none of those kinds of issues in the kitchen that you would maybe think of in a stereotypic European, specifically French or German kitchen, where there's that there's that prominent chef, you know,
shouts,
usually a male,
yeah,
and you know, yells and throws
tough love,
things.
Yeah.
I didn't grow up in those kinds of kitchens, so I didn't have those kinds of problems.
I'm sure you've said this many times before, but why did you land on Italian cuisine as your your love, your passion. How did it happen?
Well, it wasn't just Italian cuisine, and it was just the part of Italian cuisine that I love. And it's the simplicity. It's the depth of flavors. It's the seasonality. It's the simple preparation. It's the food is supposed to, I feel, or meant to bring so much joy to the table. And that's where it ends up, and that's where it all comes together, is at the table with people you love, people you knew you meet. That's the exciting part of food. And I think that nobody but the Italians know and embrace it as well.
I've read that you don't call yourself a chef. Is that still the case?
It never was a word that...
Yeah.
I don't know. There's something about titles that are kind of weird to me. I'm not sure what it is. But again, when I think of that chef, it was that chef growing up that
barked orders.
Yeah, that barked orders, threw things, wore starch white coats and a big white hat. That, I don't know.
I thought to be a chef, you had to have a restaurant. And if you were a cook, you didn't have a... So Nigella, have you heard of Nigella?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So she describes... Well, actually, she describes...
But she doesn't have a restaurant.
She describes herself as a home cook.
Yeah.
Which is what I call myself. Yeah. And I'm not like Nigella, really, at all.
Well, right. You know, some people would disagree.
Sorry, they don't.
But yeah, you feel comfortable being a cook.
Yeah, a cook, yeah. I don't know what it... I don't know why.
Do you like cooking?
Still. I love cooking. I love cooking. I love working with my hands. I love touching and, you know, massaging, not manipulating, but massaging ingredients, you know. Unfortunately, just because of my schedule, I don't get to do it as much as I would love. But I do get to do it the 2 months that I spend in Italy every summer. And that's where I cook.
Which part of Italy?
In Umbria, which is where I have a little house.
Lovely.
And that's where I do all my cooking. I do get to cook here a little, but not like I can cook there, where there's nothing else to distract me. And I just get to invite people over, and I just get to wake up in the morning and write my list and lay out my mise en place. And I get to start cooking. And that's when I really am the happiest. But I just finished another cookbook. It's being sent in tomorrow.
Wow. Well,
a baking book. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Did you do sourdough bread during lockdown?
No, and this is how I start. Well, that's what I talk about in this book. So I didn't because I've done it.
Yeah.
Which doesn't mean I couldn't make bread for mine, but I didn't have that urge. I didn't have, you know, I think all the people, somebody asked me once, why do you think all these people baked bread during the pandemic? Besides all the obvious, which was, you know, it's so homing, it's nurturing, it, you know, I need comfort, you know, all those things. I think also it was because so many people said to themselves, I don't have the time to bake bread, and that's why I don't make it. So it was an excuse. Or when I find the time to bake bread, I'm going to learn how. And all of a sudden, everybody was given that time. And
yeah.
So they had to make good with that promise they made themselves.
Or kill the starter.
Yeah.
What's your starter called?
It doesn't have a name.
Oh, that's not very fun, Nancy. God, come on.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello? Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
We ask everybody on the podcast what their last supper would be before they were about to go off somewhere, that they were not going to have all the things that they loved.
For about 6 months.
Without a doubt, it wouldn't be a supper. It would just be, I love crusty bread slathered
with
European butter.
Oh, really?
Or drowned in olive oil.
It goes both ways. Salty butter. Do you like salty or
I like to control
unsalted.
My salt.
Okay,
so then I add salt. Yeah. Okay. But then I add salt. But I just can't, you know, like right now, I'll tell you what I'm obsessed with. I get obsessed. I'm obsessed with pistachios. And like I find that that's all I'm eating these days. I love to work for my food. I love opening them up. I don't like a bag of shelled pistachios. But there's something, the salty, the crunchy, the working for the little prize.
The kernel, yeah.
That's all I'm like want to eat.
Because you bake as well. I feel like you like a little hardship. But you need to earn that morsel.
Yeah, and you burn off all those calories.
Oh, yeah, obviously. Where's your bakery of choice in LA?
For what?
For you know, bread or, you know, pastries, because obviously you had La Brea.
I think the person doing the best pastries that you could just sort of buy as a pastry shop definitely would be Marge over at my old La Brea bakery spot.
Okay. Okay.
At Republique. She's just a fantastic job.
Yeah, I've eaten there. Yeah. And the bread was exceptional.
Yep. And her, but the bread that we get, by the way, and I think it's very delicious and you'll like the name, being who you are. It's called Bub and Grandma.
Bub and Grandma.
And they're just in the process of opening up a sort of bricks and mortar place. Right now it's just wholesale. And it's just everything you want, the crusty sourdough, you know.
So we've got a kind of appetizer with the bread and the pistachios. Entree, what are you going to have for your last supper?
Well, and it can't just be bread and butter anchovies. I mean,
I feel like we can push it a little further. Anchovies love it. I love
know.
It.
And we love what we use. I do too. And
where do you get your anchovies?
We get our anchovies, and I'm talking about the canned anchovies.
Yeah. Mm.
So the hands down, the best anchovies, and I've been through them all, are the ones from the Cantabrian Sea in Spain.
Called what's Ortiz, the name?
It's not
Ortiz.
No. I will give you a little can of
them.
And you can try them. But they're meaty, they're not funky, and I think they're
and
just the
best. And what
color
are they? They're not dark brown and salty.
They are.
They're like silvery.
No. They're dark, but they're not salty, but they're meaty and just delicious.
Okay.
So is that your final answer?
And my final answer, I'll tell you why, and it leads into another question.
Jessie.
It leads into another question, and you said, one of the questions that you were going to ask me is, do I have table manners? And I was going to come back with you and say, oh, I do have something else I would eat. Do I have good table manners? And if you think that being able to eat with your hands is good table manners, then I have excellent ones, because I love anything I can eat with my hands. I love picking up salads. So a really well-crafted Caesar salad. I love picking up food by my hand. So that's why I'm saying the crusty bread with the butter, and then maybe I'll drown some, just condiments around me. Semi-dried tomatoes, anchovies, buffalo milk,
so
mozzarella.
So like an antipasto, like we're going
going that way. We're as opposed to
a big
a heavy,
dinner.
Yes, there.
So many, you need to meet Thomasina Myers when you come to London.
You sound exactly like her.
She talks about
salad with her hands.
But it's very interesting because she talked about also wanting to, feeling a bit lost. Now, I don't think you were lost, but she said she felt lost and didn't know what she wanted to do, and then had this feeling that she wanted to do cooking. And
she went to the best place, Ballymalloy.
Know that. There you go.
So she went there. She said in the time that she wanted to be a chef, a cook, it felt still quite original. And that was only, you know, the early noughties, you know. And so... She kind of felt like it wasn't like now, which, you know, food is so sexy.
Yeah.
And cooking is so sexy. It's like, you know.
And so well received and so welcome.
Her obsession is chilies. So she puts chili and chocolate cake, even in chocolate.
I love chilies.
She did this beautiful flourless chocolate cake.
But chilies I've never
cake.
Heard of, you know. It's, yeah.
Well, it's all these Mexican, yeah. I mean, yeah. anyway, but, and she talked about eating with her with hands, her hands salad
and feeding it. And yeah.
It's so tactile. But you see, like she was, you said that she felt lost, and then she thought, I think I'd like to go to cooking school, and then she went to cooking school. So for me, it was not realizing I wanted to cook or liked cooking. It was more that, you know, I was looking after a guy. And
thank you.
While I was doing it, that epiphany we talked about earlier was that, wow, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. I didn't know it. I never thought about it before. This is a shrimp olio olio.
Ooh.
And a fennel sausage.
So what people can't see is that we've got the fennel sausage pizza that I have heard about, and then we've got a shrimp with garlic and, delicious.
Olive oil and parsley.
Is this the chopped salad that I've heard about? You're defining chopped salad.
Right. Yes, it is. And
that's a bit of a bugger to eat with your fingers or not?
That one is, yes, because I would be able to figure out a way. Yeah. But yes, it is because everything's sliced up. That's why I said Caesar, because most of the time, one, you know, has spears of of the leaves, right? So that is our...
This is what Benny's mum was like, you've got to get the tricolore.
Oh, that's aubergine parmigiana. Yeah. My favourite thing on earth.
But eggplant, we're in America, it's eggplant. Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, aubergine.
Melanzane parmigiana.
Right here, yes. Yeah.
And so what, basically, we're being very lucky, and we're in Mozza, but we're
in Mozza, eating from Mozza to go,
which is next door.
Right. Now, ordinarily, in other times, the pizzeria was open 7 days a week, where there would be a much more, a much larger menu. You know, the Mozza to go was a very small part of our pizzeria menu.
I've never had a shrimp on a pizza.
Never? You haven't lived.
I obviously haven't. It's delicious.
I want to try that one.
Here you go. So this is the
and you're not
going to
eat anything, Ashley.
No, I'm going to watch you, though.
Well, that's why you look like you and I look like me.
Have you got a sweet tooth much? Are you going to have a dessert on this last supper?
If I had a dessert, it would just be a chocolate bar. Because I also love just breaking a hunk of chocolate. You know, I just like the simplicity.
Which chocolate do you like?
Well, I like a chocolate. I like a bittersweet chocolate. Mm-hmm. As far as the brands, there's just so many of them. But I like a bittersweet plain chocolate. I like it with Maldon sea salt. I don't mind if there's an almond here or there or some toffee. But for the most part, just a simple. In fact, one of my restaurants that I'm going to be opening up inside the Hollywood Roosevelt, where I have one restaurant that's going right now and one that's in the works.
That's the hotel, right?
Yeah, One of them is going to be a wine and cheese bar, so super, super simple. And one of the desserts is just going to be a three chocolate bar tasting, you know, from a local chocolate maker that I think she does a really lovely job. And it's just going to be thin slabs of chocolate. And so I think that's what it'd be. But I love gelato, so maybe that's not fair because I really love pistachio, love stracciatella. Probably my favorite is fiore di latte, which is that plain white, you know, it's just the flour of the cream. That's it.
This is
delicious. Really yummy.
Thank you.
It's really good.
Is this a sourdough crust?
It's not.
Oh, it isn't.
No, but it is a crust where it takes 3 days for completion. So day one, and it's obviously all in rotation, but day one is putting together the sponge, so a part of the recipe to allow it to ferment. Mm-hmm. Day two is finishing that dough and letting it rise and fold and do kind of crazy things to it and then shape it into its pizza round and then letting it sit overnight in the refrigerator for that. So it's a three-day process, but not starting with sourdough.
I have a Gosney pizza oven. Have you heard of Gosney?
No, I know one couple that we have out here, like Uni.
No.
So you have, is it a
I've
small?
I've got one, I've got all the gear, no idea. But I will, I believe in myself and my husband becoming pizza pros.
Well, if you're gonna become a pizza pro,
yeah.
Is that why you bought it to become a pizza pro?
Yeah, because it's all my kids eat.
Yeah, so I have a lovely chapter in our Mozza cookbook on pizza.
Okay.
But if you wanted a pizza specific, one of my favorite pizzerias in the country, perhaps my favorite, is one in New Jersey, and he just came out with a book, and his book is fantastic, including there's a QR code so you can actually see him making and shaping, so you can watch, so you're not just reading, which I think helps. Yeah. And I will give you the specifics. His name, the author, the chef of the pizzeria, his name is Dan Richter.
Okay. Dan Richter.
The name of the pizza, the book, and his pizzeria is Raza. And that pizza book will teach you how to be the master you want to be.
And how did you find Dan?
Found him because there was an article in the New York Times a number of years ago by a very, you know, renowned and well-respected food writer that said the best pizza in New York is actually in New Jersey. I mean, that must have just killed a lot of New Yorkers, you know, and went on to talk about it. So I went out there to try it, and it was delicious. And we've had him in here to do collaborations at our pizzeria, and he's a lovely man. I've eaten there whenever I fly to London and other parts. United at one point, which is my airline, only flew out of New Jersey, and
we've not stopped there.
So Jersey City, there I go.
Nancy, what's in the tricolore salad?
So it is a mix of lettuces, rucola and radicchio and frise.
Yeah.
And then there's layers of Parmigiano Reggiano, mm-hmm. and then an anchovy vinaigrette.
Yeah.
And in the chopped salad, you can see everything on top, which unfortunately served this way, which is the only way you can serve it to go. Everything's on top.
Yeah.
We toss it at the restaurant, so you get an equal mingling of aged provolone, fennel salami, iceberg lettuce, radicchio, pepperoncini, red onion, garbanzo beans, tomato. All the flavors, when I originally came up with the salad, seemed to go with a pizzeria. You know, I don't know, again, in London. And by the way, when I went to London in the Cordon Bleu, now I didn't have, in 77 is when I went, I didn't have a lot of money to eat in any high-end restaurant. So the restaurants that were affordable to me that I could eat at were truly dreadful. And now the food scene cannot be beat in London. It is just fantastic.
Do you think?
Oh,
is
my
that
God.
Why you wanted Thrive- a place there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Thriving, and the young cooks are so energetic, and the food is so great. But the a typical pizzeria Italian restaurant in Los Angeles growing up always had a relish tray, and on that relish tray were whole pepperoncini, there would be green onions, there would be some provolone cheese, some salami. So this is all the flavors of that relish tray in a salad with this oregano vinaigrette. And that's key because it always had a lot of oregano.
Nancy, could you, well, whilst I stuff my face with your lovely food, could you tell me a taste or a scent that can take you back somewhere instantly?
Wow, so many. But
what springs to mind?
Great question, because, I mean, like, it'll be a dish that will bring me back. But if I think about going back to, say, an experience, right? I think whenever I eat feta cheese, Greek feta cheese, with olive oil and that wild oregano just sprinkled on top, I think about the summer where I spent 6 weeks in Greece on Paros Island, and I think every single day I ate the Greek salad, and I never got tired of it.
Do you go to Greece a lot now?
Or no.
Because you go
I've been
to
there
Italy?
Once. Yeah, I don't go there, but it's like you can't eat
Was it the that. Greek salad every day that put you off? I don't know.
No, it was just, you know, besides going to Italy where I have a home, it's really the only place that I take a vacation. Next week I'm going to Hawaii with my kids. Well, my daughter and my grandkids and her husband. And I think it's the first vacation. You know, I don't take vacations, even though my life is a vacation. But I always feel more comfortable when there is a work component to it. So like when I go to London, for instance, I look after the restaurant. And then I go and I eat out and I shop and, But so my 2 months that I spent in Italy in the summer, which is very generous, 6 weeks to 8 weeks in the summer and 2 weeks in the winter, those are strictly vacations. And so I just would never, if somebody invited me to Greece to go cook a meal, I would be there in a second, but I haven't been.
I think the food scene's really improved in Greece.
In Greece, yeah.
Also Istanbul, Turkey.
I've never been to Istanbol. I've never been to Morocco.
The cuisine is supposed to be amazing.
I know. I love the food in Israel, and I've been there.
We haven't been for ages.
I've been there several times for food, you know, food reasons. I mean, not just to go. And boy,
apparently the food scene is exceptional now.
It's exceptional.
Nancy, I wanted, before we let you go and you back to your busy, I mean, you know, we're in your restaurant.
I love the decor in here.
Oh, thank you.
It feels very European, I think.
Did you see the other restaurants?
No.
I'll give you a quick little tour.
I want to know what your grandchildren's favorite dish of yours is. What are you called? Are you grandma? Baba?
I'm Nona.
Nona!
As Nona, anything that's sweet. So, for instance, Goldie, that's my my two grandkids are Ike and Goldie. And it was Goldie's 1 year birthday last weekend. So Ike and I made her cupcakes. But Ike, it has to be sweet and it has to be cake. He could care less about anything else. So
how old
that's,
is he?
He's three and a half.
Oh, Jessie's got a 3.5-year-old. Or just 3-year-old, yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh. I've got a 5 and a 3 and a 9-month. Yeah.
9 month,
yeah. And a patient.
Are you stopping? Or?
Yeah, I'm done. How many have you got?
3.
Yeah.
I've got 3.
There you go. I was one of two.
It's her fault that I had 3.
I was one of two. My dad was one of 4.
Right. So you.
Yeah. He,
3
no,
felt
no,
right to
three.
Me.
No, two 3. He had 2 sisters.
2 felt like 2 adults and 2 children, but 3 felt like a family.
Like the right thing to do. Yeah. And where's your family? You know, my father's mother's side of the family were all farmers from Saskatchewan, Canada. And that's what I named my, they were part of the first Jewish settlement in Saskatchewan. And I named my latest restaurant in Los Angeles, the Barish, after that side of the family. That was their last name, Barish.
Barish.
I love that. And where's that?
The Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel.
Okay. And that's opened, that hasn't opened up yet?
It has, but dinner only 5 days a week.
Okay.
No breakfast, lunch, some snacks in the lobby.
What's next for you?
So next, opening in Singapore next month.
Wow.
Yeah.
A Mozza.
Opening up probably in Miami and opening up in Washington, D.C.
Exciting.
Nancy Silverton, thank you so much.
Thank you. This
was
so fun. Wonderful. So in London, we have to eat around.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I'll make you my chicken soup.
Okay, I'd love it.
The last bit of shrimp pizza in my mouth.
She's the cheekiest person I think I've ever met in my life. So interesting and so loved food and she's just wonderful. But I love her style. She just looked wonderful.
Thank you, Nancy Silverton, for having us in your place, being such a great guest. No wonder everyone loves her here.
Yeah, everyone does.
And she does have a restaurant in London.
Yeah.
It's in the Treehouse, which is really central London. You go to Oxford Circus. There's a mozza there, so you can go and eat Nancy Silverton's food in London, if you are in the UK.
Thanks for listening. Tune in next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com. Listen to this Acast show ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.